Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Idol episode 2 Double Fantasy is over, but here on Posho Recaps, we're just getting started. My name is Ariel, and I'm so excited to be joined by my guest today. I don't know where Grace went. She was like behind the stage. She was practicing her dance moves, and I think she fell. We're checking on her though. But we're here with Jess Sterling. Jess Sterling, what's up, Jess?
My feet are killing me. I've been dancing all day. They're bleeding. But you know what? I've stuffed my feet into some high heel shoes and I'm ready to talk.
Isn't that the normal thing to do? Your feet are bleeding. Just put them in like to the tight shoes.
Never in my life. Like, listen, I can appreciate beauty is pain and on and on and on. But like literally never in my life would I be like, my feet are bleeding. Some guy's over. I'm going to put on nice shoes for him. Like, bitch, no, you're going to see my bare feet. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're going to like it. You're going to like it. Jess, this is episode 2. Grace and I talked about episode 1. As she said on episode 1, we're watching this show, so you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But you did, and we thank you for it. So what's been your take so far, just overall through two episodes?
I would say I liked this episode better than I liked episode 1. So that's great. We've seen improvement. I still don't think the show is like great. I still think that like my biggest issue is I do find Jocelyn as a character interesting and I want to know more about her. I'm interested in her story, especially exploring her grief and like how she's dealing with that. But on the Tedros side of things, I can't get into that specific storyline. And on top of that, I do think the show tends to lean into like the salaciousness and like the nudity and the sex stuff like gratuitously to the point where it feels like they're doing it just to be a bit salacious. And so that's where I kind of start to like tune out a bit on the show, is when they lean into that stuff, because it just feels like they're doing it just to like be grand and be like, oh, look at, we have nipples on our television show, you know? Like, it feels like, because I'm used to, as we all know, I'm used to like the Succession Sunday nights, right? And Succession is like, even though it's on HBO, there really wasn't any nudity. There really wasn't any sex scenes. So it feels like they've gone completely in the opposite direction with The Idol. So I do think episode 2 is an improvement over episode 1, but I'm not fully sure I'm bought in on the show yet.
Right. You, the listener, should buy in, subscribe, PushYourRecaps.com/euphoria. Yes, it's on the Euphoria feed. Thank you for mentioning that, Jess. I agree with you for the most part. And that makes it sound like I will disagree with some part of it. And I don't. I think that I was I was gonna say, oh, you didn't join this like weird cult where we're all singers. And we all have like hidden talents and we're all in, because I signed right before we started recording because I thought that you would sign and I didn't want to be left out. So joke's on me, I guess. I thought that this episode I was kind of almost impressed by how much I cared about the first, let's say, half of it.
You know,
the Jocelyn struggling with her emotions. And I'm just really, I think it's really compelling, her story and like the little bits that we're finding out. You know, we had already known in episode one that her mom was sick and then passed away. And that was obviously a really tough thing for her. And then now she kind of had, and everyone's scared, you know, in the first episode, she's going to have a breakdown. She can have a breakdown. And I'm kind of like, she seems fine. What's the problem? And then now we get into this episode, and it's a little bit like, oh, I see what they were afraid of. This is what everyone was worried about. But Lily Rose Depp, you know, I almost feel like, I want to be careful how I say this because I don't want it. I think it's a compliment, I think, but like think I'm almost more compelled by her when she's not speaking than when she is speaking, because her face is so emotional and there's just a depth to like the very real, I don't know, trauma and she seems like a person who's lost, right? She seems like a person who has no idea and is like literally thrown into the deep end and is kind of expected to swim.
I kind of understand what you're saying because she is dressed. So Jocelyn is often dressed in these very like either like barely any clothing or like I'm thinking of the music video scene specifically. She's dressed in like this very like extra outfit, right? And like her makeup is just like over the top and she has these like pink extensions in. But like I will say that I do think Lily Rose Depp is like doing an excellent job of like acting through those things, because another actor could get kind of lost in just like the excessiveness of what they're putting on her. Mm-hmm. I kind of agree with what you're saying, because especially the scene where she's having that breakdown during the music video and she's just sobbing and she's crying. And she's like, no, it's fine. You know, wipe my tears. They won't see it anyway. It won't be too close up. You know, I understand what you're saying. There is like this, like the moments I liked the most were the moments where we get this like sincerity and the depth of character over the more like, I don't know. Again, it does feel kind of like the show is just wanting to like push all the buttons of all of the like uncomfortability things that like everyone, you know, they're like, oh, what if we have him, you know, like tell her what to do and the other girl's watching? Like it feels very, come on now, you know, come on.
Yeah. Male gaze much. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, we can go a little bit like overall very simply beat by beat, but at the very beginning of it, we get, she's clearly pining over Tedros almost, or as I call him around these parts, Ted Ross, because that's like, he's giving way more Ted Ross vibes to me than he's giving Tedros vibes, but that's, you know, whatever.
Ted Ross.
I will not be convinced otherwise, but she's calling him and he's clearly not ghosting, right? Because he's going to speak, but like mini ghosting, avoiding her, screening her call. And it just screams like, from the little we know about her, to me, it screamed like he's playing this game, or he's playing with her emotions.
He's doing this on purpose. Yeah. He wants to leave her wanting for more. And so he's not answering her phone calls. And she's obviously really, this is where I like the character of Jocelyn, and I feel like I understand the character of Jocelyn, where she's very nervous to release this like quote unquote new sound. She has this like remixed version of the song and she wants to play it for her like team, I guess is what I would call them. And she's very nervous about it and she wants to speak with him beforehand because he helped her with it, and he's not answering. And it's like, okay, we know the games this guy's playing.
Mm-hmm. Jess, if I came on the podcast and you were talking and I just started doing like a in the background, do you think that would make the podcast better or worse?
She goes out to her team and she plays this version of the song and she's dancing by herself to
this. Committed.
I felt the cringe level was like so high because it's just like breathy sound. It's like, okay, almost like a panting dog. They got hired to like sing in the
Winston, is that you is
on the pod? And it's just like, it's so over the top. And she's obviously very proud of it. And I feel like, obviously, we got to talk about Nikki, but she really is not at all subtle and like gentle and tactful with her words. She's not immediately like, no, like this is not commercial. Yeah. We're like, we're not doing this.
Yeah, Jane Addams doing a wonderful job being like, especially later on that we'll get to, like just being not quite. I mean, she's not unkind, but she's not kind, you know, and she's being very blunt. She's talking about all the money that they spent and, you know, the we get a little bit more information. You know, we were told last episode that they had to cancel the tour, and here we're getting a little bit more context. Like, you said you were fine, and then we had to pull out like last minute before the Madison Square Garden show and refund all these tickets, and we've been, you know, we flew you around the world trying to get you your new sound and blah blah blah. And it's like, okay, but also, you know, you had the money. You chose to do that. It's not like
is really messed up. Like, this is where I think the show does a good job of showing that this type of environment and this type of line of work doesn't give grace to grace isn't here, but doesn't give grace to people who are going through like a mental health crisis or like going through a rough patch, right? Like her mom literally died. And I'm trying to remember, and you'll have to remind me, Ariel, if you know, like, was she sick with cancer? Do we know what she died from?
I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, I think we get a brief cancer mention.
I was going to say,
much information in general as to like any specifics. Because
it was like an illness. It wasn't like a sudden death. It was
No. You know, yeah, it was like an illness that seemed to move very quickly. Like, I think they were told she was sick, and then it was, you know, it sounds like it was aggressive, and she passed. And, you know, obviously that would affect anyone. That's like, that's on like just a fundamental level, that is an incredibly human thing. But then you have all of these other layers on top of it of like people who were depending on her. And I like to your point, I like that the show does a good job of depicting that, of just the pressure that she feels. And like, it's her whole team and they all work for her and they're there to support her. But also it does start to feel like, you know, certainly with like the Nikki character specifically, it feels like they're there to make sure that she doesn't mess it up, and less so to be like, we believe in you and we'll follow you.
Yeah, it's tough because we see characters. I'm thinking specifically of characters like Destiny. Mm-hmm. And I'm so sorry, whoever Hank Azaria,
Haim.
Haim. Okay. I'm not great with names. I'm warning everyone right now. I'm going to mess it up.
I only remember because I can hear him saying it in the first
time. The accent. So we have characters like Destiny and Haim who do feel, I'm so sorry. We do feel like they do care about her and they, but it's mixed up in the business side of things.
Yeah, it's complicated.
No one is there solely for her. The people that are surrounded by her are getting paid by her and therefore have a vested interest in her success. Mm-hmm. And so it is really tough to see. I think this is like a really nice glimpse into like, we think that these people who are rich and famous and have all this money and are celebrities have such an easy life.
Right.
But they're still human beings. They still go through things like grief and depression and anxiety and all of those things. And it does seem like Jocelyn doesn't always have the most agency that we think that she would have, because she has to please all of these people and do everything for these people. Right. And so she's like forced to like listen to Nikki and want to do what Nikki says. And she like stomps off, she goes to bed, and Haim comes in and tries to like comfort her, you know, like, oh, you have your big music video tomorrow, which ends up being the hottest of messes. Like,
oh God. Yeah.
So it's awful.
It's really bad. And, you know, speaking of Destiny and Haim and the photo, or excuse me, the video shoot, I'm reminded now as you're talking, like we're talking about her mother, and they say, I believe it's Haim that says to her, it's like, we're her parents now. Like, we said, we promised her that we would be there for her in that capacity. And I think that's, to your point, that's very genuine, but it's very complicated because it's mixed up in all the business side of it. And it's not clean. Yeah. You know, it's not just, we're going to support you no matter what. It's like, we're going to support you, but there are like a couple of conditions.
Right.
And the conditions are you're not allowed to have a breakdown on set. Apparently.
Yeah, you have to get it together. And yeah, and apparently when she, so this is the other question I had for you, because I'm struggling a little bit sometimes to follow exactly what's happening, but the reason she's like so late to begin with already for the music video. And it's because the makeup artist, it took like 3 extra hours because they had to airbrush cuts on her inner thighs.
Yes.
The night before, we saw her like messing around with like ice in her cup. Mm-hmm. Were we actually watching it happen, or is this from like her Tedros adventure?
It's a good question, because I think in the first episode there was a mention of like cuts on her arm. So you know,
more self-harm.
There is the idea, unfortunately, about like some self-harm. But to your point, the fact that they were with, or excuse me, the fact that she was with Tedros the night before leads me to believe that he might have had something to do with the inner thigh marking specifically. Mm-hmm. I just assume so. It's entirely possible.
Not confirmed, which is
no,
that's
it's
what
not
I was
confirmed
wondering.
Because okay. I think to me, as we talk about it, I guess it's entirely possible that maybe he left and she was feeling like very intense emotions and she decided to, you know, create those marks. It's hard to say, and you know, we'll have to like track her relationship with Ted Ross to see if like there's any more of that. But I think it is, because there's a history of it, we can make some assumptions. But as far as Ted Ross, nothing is off the table.
Got it. Okay.
And to Jocelyn's credit, she does try to shut the shoot down before it falls off the rails.
Oh, she's like she I don't think I can do this today. Like, yeah. I want to, and she says, like, I want to cancel the rest of the day, but I understand, like, all these people have to be paid. Like, I will pay out of pocket. Like, it's totally fine. Like, it's going to be, like, $450,000 to shut down. And so she tries to talk to Haim about it, but he basically pumps her up and he's like, no, we have to, like, move forward. Basically, like, it's now or never type of, like, you know, ultimatum here.
Right.
And the other thing I'm curious about, and I'm wondering how much we'll dive into this on the show, is Jocelyn's relationship with her mother, because I could have swore there was like a one-off line that was something like they actually didn't have the best relationship. And at the very least, it does seem like she was like a momager, like she was heavily involved in Jocelyn's career, is what I gathered.
Yeah, I think it was in the first episode, if I'm remembering correctly, there was a line at some point, whether it was the beginning of the episode or last episode, where somebody mentions that like their relationship was rough. It might even come up in the interview with Talia, who's the, you know, the Vanity Fair writer who's there to do, I believe it's Vanity Fair, who's there to do the you know, this piece about her. And obviously it's going to take a while, right? Like Talia has access, is going to have access for a little while, and the piece is going to come together. I think even in that interview, it came up like we didn't have the best relationship, but it kind of made sense that like in some ways that makes the loss of her harder because you didn't have a great relationship.
Right.
But here, to your point, it isn't until this episode that we get that extra context of I've never done this without my mom. I was like, oh, her mom wasn't just like around being a mom. It seems like her mom was like very much involved in her career, and all the more reason why Destiny and Haim are like, we need to step up, because they're both, if her mom was both, they now themselves need to be both for her, both, you know, the business and the mom, the momager, to your point.
Very complicated, and it does. And I like, oh my gosh, especially later in the episode when she calls out for her mom,
my heart broke
for her. Like, again, this is what I'm saying. The show isn't doing everything great. Like, I feel like we could be very clear about that.
Right.
But the emotion and the grief, I do think they're doing a really good job with.
Yeah, that was, like I said, I was surprised. And the interesting thing to me about the Haim comment about the money was that then later it comes up, because at first you're like, okay, $450,000, obviously a substantial amount of money for us normies. For her, perhaps not so much. But then we get the extra detail of like he's covering half her mortgage.
Yes.
So it's like, oh, that's why he's talking about
the money.
He's
like, I can't keep floating you. Like, we need to make money. This is why it makes more sense that there's so much pressure on everyone.
Yes.
It's because she's not as like, I mean, she probably is super, super rich, but she has a lot of expenses,
She's
guess.
Not very
and
fluid.
So
she's not very fluid right now.
Yeah, she doesn't. She's not very fluid.
Not very liquid. Very liquid.
Liquid. Yeah, sorry. Liquid. She's not fluid
I'm
either.
Sorry. clearly, I am a great financial consultant.
We talked about fluids last episode. Yeah. Remember that was the drama. That was the tea.
There was some fluids this episode.
There
too.
Was some fluids. But yeah. So it was. It's very interesting. And then we like suddenly we have Destiny and Chaim start looking into Ted Ross and being like, who is this man? Like, who even is he?
I loved this. Because someone's looking into this. How the hell is he just like able to get into her life like this and nobody notices?
And she has a full team and like this massive compound like house. Mm-hmm. You know, you think people would notice him coming in. Right. But he apparently owes a bunch of people a bunch of money.
Shocked. I'm shocked. Yeah. Yes.
He's from Hawaii, apparently. Like, that's the last record of his existence.
And then he just disappears. I love this. I love the little Chaim and Destiny dynamic where he's like, how'd you let this happen? How did you know? And she's like, I didn't know. If I had known, I would have told you before you told me. Like, and you get like a really good sense of their relationship. Again, Grace and I said this last time, but I think the supporting cast is so wonderful and does such a good job of being like very funny, very serious. You know, obviously the stakes are very high. It's a very like tense situation and they're just such a joy to watch. You know, I would add, I think these three, like Chaim, Destiny and Leia, played by Rachel Snow, is my top.
Leia slayed me when Chaim goes to Leia and he's just like, okay, I need to know about him. And she's like, well, he's a person of color. And he's like, okay, but like, you know,
like, what
can you
color?
Tell me more? Like from Hawaii? And she's like, I don't know. And he's
I
like,
really don't
you
think
can
he's
say
from Hawaii.
He's black. Like you can say that he's black. Like you're allowed to say that.
And then she hesitates still. And he's like, well, is he black? And she's like, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, like Ariel, that was the funniest moment of the entire episode to me. It was her just being like, he's a person of color. Like she's
and
really
she keeps repeating it. Like
that's gonna explain anything. It was so funny. And yeah, so like as all these are little chats are happening, like the director is getting like more and more pissed because Jocelyn is like continually messing up. Like at certain times she's not even lip syncing to the song anymore. Like she really isn't, her head isn't there.
Right.
And they also, then we have Chaim asking Leia about like the cuts on her thighs. And she says, oh, she told me a glass broke on her thighs, which Ariel, this is why I was questioning this because we see her when she's doing the remix of the, when she's doing that, she's taking like a glass full of ice and putting it in the hoo-ha parts.
Oh, interesting.
And I was wondering
so
if like she gripped it too tightly. That sounds ridiculous, but I don't
know. But like, I think we are all supposed to think that excuse is garbage. Like obviously, even the way Leia is saying it, it sounds very much like she doesn't believe it. But I think like Rachelson notes, like brand of comedy is just like so awkward and so just like kind of I don't know, that's just what she said. Like it just kind of trails off. It's freaking kills me every time. I did notice the ice. I didn't notice where she was putting it, but I did notice the ice because I was like, well, what's she doing with that? And you know, like numbing her overall pain.
That's the thing that I was confused about, is like I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be ambiguous as to like how she got these cuts, but so like so much is going on. And honestly, Ariel, I felt so bad for her because on top of all of this like pressure to succeed and pressure to do well and perform under like just all these eyes, everyone has high expectations. There's also, is it Talia? Is that the name of the journalist?
Yes, Talia. Yeah, the journalist.
She's there and she is writing this article. Whoa. And so it's like,
I'm so nervous.
Right?
Okay, so I have a question for you about her. Do we think, because to me, it seems like in the moments, both in the first episode and the second episode, when Talia and Jocelyn are alone, it seems like Talia is genuinely kind to her. Like it's not just a bit, it's, you know, yeah, take whatever. In this episode, it was like, you know, Jocelyn basically implores her, please, you know, when you're writing this, like take into account, you know, about my mom and how I'm feeling. And she doesn't, but you know, obviously, understandably so, she's afraid as coming off of like a crazy person, or, you know, Talia writing about how she doesn't have it together, what have you. Obviously, it's a very precarious situation, as we keep talking about, for her career. But at the end of the day, she's a journalist. We do see her take out her notebook. She's well within her right, you know, with the exception of everything that they say that's off the record that they have, you know, conversations about. Mm-hmm. Like everything else is on the table for her to write about, and it's really her prerogative.
What
do you think? Like, do you think she's really, to me, it almost seems like she's a little bit conflicted, which is very interesting to me to watch, like, Talia be conflicted. Because like I said, it seems like she's being very genuine to her in those moments. But, you know, she needs eyes on her article.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're meant to feel like Talia does have a heart and does care and does worry about Jocelyn, because she is a human being and she does care. But she works for Variety. It is her job to write this article. I have a feeling it's going to be a bit shocking when the article comes out about just how honest and blunt it is about Jocelyn. Yeah. And I hope I'm wrong, right? Like, I hope she gives Jocelyn a fair spotlight, like, you know, just like gives her a fair portrayal. But I think we're meant to feel like it's a sticky situation for Talia. I really love the character of Talia. Actually, I find the conversations between Talia and I don't know exactly, Xander is the character's name. I believe he's, again, the job title of all these characters is what confuses me most. It seems like he was friends with Jocelyn before.
Yes, he's in charge of her brand. He's the one that is like, he's basically like the, I think he calls himself her creative director.
I thought that's what Dan Levy was. What does Dan Levy do?
Dan Levy, I think, is the publicist. So this Nikki,
is, I get so
Nikki,
confused.
I will say, and I brought this up last week, but for me, it was like Nikki, I always refer back to BoJack, the BoJack Horseman universe in my head, because that did like a really good job of, you know, at least establishing some of the differences, even though I didn't really understand. Like Nikki is the manager, or what's the other thing that Ari Gold was on Entourage, the agent. He's agent. Either the agent or the manager.
Yes.
Xander is he's in charge of her brand. So like in the sense that like Jocelyn is a company, he's in charge of like, you know, controlling how she looks and how she seems.
Her portrayal.
And then Leia is just her assistant and her friend.
Her best friend.
She's like, I'm her assistant and her friend. And then Destiny is her, I don't know. Actually, I think Haim is her manager and like Destiny is maybe Haim's assistant. That's what it seems like to me.
That feels right. They seem like a team.
Yeah. And then so that would make Nikki her agent. And then Dan Levy is her publicist, Benjamin. So I think that'll track.
I really enjoyed the conversation that was had between Talia and Xander. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really, I really like both of those characters. And I'm really interested in that because Xander says like, listen, I'm here for her, you know, like as a human, as a person.
Right.
And so, oh my gosh, my heart broke for Jocelyn. She nails it. Everyone is thrilled. She's killing it on stage. And the camera malfunctions.
And everyone is so excited, right? Because going into that take, Jocelyn has said, let's do it again so many times. The director's freaking out. The director literally like throws a chair. Like, am I the director here or is she speaking? Like, I think half that lady. Half to Jocelyn, I wasn't sure. And then they get the take and everyone's so excited. And you can tell Jocelyn's like tapped in. And you know,
did
it's
we
that
get
thing
it?
Of, like,
did we get it?
Oh my God, the camera was out of focus and they can't get it in focus fast enough because it's like on a thing and it loose, you know, whatever, technical stuff. Our hearts were already broken for her because she had to like, she was barely pulling it together. And then now this happened. And of course, she literally like, she gave her all, like that was all she had left in that moment to get that one good take. And she was feeling so good about it. And once they want her to do it again, it's like, you can't. It's you literally, your body, your brain and your body had a deal, right? Her brain and her body had a deal.
One last time.
One last take, whether she realized it or not. So your body's like, all right, I'm going to use all my reserves on this last take and the stupid camera. And they wanted to do it again. And it's like, no.
Well,
no,
she
no
gets
more.
On stage and she's already like, oh my gosh, this is when I thought Jocelyn was the most relatable as a character. Mm-hmm. Was she gets on stage and she just kneels for a second and then she just has a breakdown. And obviously, like, I've not had to, like, you know, do choreographed routines as a celebrity singer.
Not today,
maybe later. But we've all been there where we've reached our breaking point. It was like, right, everything was building and building and building. And this was just the final straw for Jocelyn. And she breaks down and we see that her feet are just bleeding, like full on, multiple toes, her ankles bleeding, and then her thighs are also bleeding, like the makeup has kind of like
rubbed off. Yeah.
And so she needs to get a touch up on that, and like, it is devastating to see poor Jocelyn like struggle through this. And she's like, she stands up and like she's facing away from the directors and everything, and they're taking like Q-tips to wipe the like couple of tears off of her face, and she's like, oh, it's fine, there, it won't be that close up. And you just think, oh, my heart for her is awful.
At that point, I'm like, is she right? Maybe she's right. Like, at that point, I was still like a little hopeful. And then just keeps streaming on her face. And then, you know, Destiny comes and they try to, like, you know, she gives her a hug. This might have been earlier, but they do like the pep talk. And Destiny had already given her like the harder sell pep talk outside. Yeah. And here, thank God, Destiny being a human, like, knows that she needs to be like more, a little warmer to her, right? And like, she gets the hug and she's like, I don't care about all these people, I only care about you, we'll get these, we'll take 10 if you want to take 10. Yeah. We'll take, whatever.
I loved but that it's, from it's, Destiny
it's too late.
Yeah, yeah, I think the hardest point. The hardest thing for me was seeing, I think it was Haim who said to Destiny, like, you gotta pep talk her into this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my gosh, does no one care about her as a freaking human being, you know?
Hard. Right, because like, they would argue, we're doing it for her, right? Like, there, she, yeah, this is what would. She yeah. wants, so we're doing it for her. But to your point, it's like, she, this is much more complicated and much more important, frankly, than
this moment. Then she, oh, and Ariel, when she turns around and then calls out for her mom, and they're all like, wait, is she calling for her mom? And
several
then,
times
it was awful. Haim comes over and he says, oh, were you calling for your mom? And she's like, no, my mom is dead. Like, she's been dead for a year.
It's like the test. And it's like, it almost made me wonder if this has happened before, because he's like,
yes,
hey, did you just call for your mom? And it's like that thing when you're like testing people. Yeah, you know, I watch a lot of
Grey's Anatomy. What year is it? Who's the president?
Testing people. Yeah, like, exactly. Where are you? What hospital are you at? You know, that kind of, it felt very, response of, no, she died a year ago, felt very like, I know that this is what I need to say in order to get them to believe that I'm okay.
That's
heartbreaking.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It felt like everybody knew she said mom. Everybody in that room heard her say
she
mom.
Said it loud.
But he very much wanted her to be like, no, I didn't say that. Like, he was baiting her to give him the answer he wanted, which is, no, I didn't say that. And so, yeah, so then they, like, eventually after this talk with Destiny, they decide, like, you know, Nikki comes over and she's like, listen, you got to take the day. And Jocelyn is so apologetic. She's like, I will pay for the day.
I'm so sorry.
She's sobbing. Like, and meanwhile, we see her like setting up this new girl to like go record something. Like, she's a really good dancer. She has a really nice voice. So it's obviously she's like trying to sign someone else.
Right.
I was like, can you just replace her like that? Like, how does that work?
Right. Yeah. I was worried that Nikki was going to be like, let's just get, her name is Diane, the dancer.
Thank
who
you,
in the
Diane.
First episode we met as like, she seemed to be like the head dancer or perhaps the choreographer.
She was like the stand-in for Jocelyn,
right? Yeah, okay. She's also like a support if like they need another dancer or whatever. And and you know, in cases like that, usually that person is the better dancer, right? Because
of course that's their
all
job.
They do, right? It's their entire thing. They're a professional dancer and, you know, in some cases choreographer. And you know, I guess to like transition a little bit into the storyline that I hate, just like the second half of the episode. Thankfully, I think it was a little less than than half, thankfully, because we get a lot of this.
Yes.
This
it's like a quarter or a third. Yeah.
Yeah.
In 10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
Our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win?
Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So we get a couple of reveals in this episode. We get the reveal that Diane is, so like you said, Nikki's watching Diane dance on the monitor. She's like, who's this girl? And I said, like, can she sing? Like, let's get her to record something right now. And like, she, of course, Nikki has like her assistant or whoever, like, go get, you know, go take her into the room, whatever.
Yeah.
They call her in, you know, they're like, we want to sign you right now. We get the reveal that Diane seems to have been like a Tedros plant in this. Yes. And like, that's the reason, because we know that Diane is the one in the first episode who took Jocelyn to Ted Ross's club. So like, and it was played in the first episode just very like, we're just gonna go out and it's fine, and like almost like mm-hmm. a coincidence. And then we find out that it seems like it was part of the plan all along from Ted Ross to like get Jocelyn there via Diane. Diane is clearly in this like, this is, I guess, where like the cult that we've heard rumors of via like, you know, the articles that have been around the show and everything. We get some glimpses of like, and this happened, I forgot about this. This happened in the middle of the Jocelyn like video shoot.
It was cut, interspersing of like, yeah, we had, oh, this is so weird.
Isaac. So, we have Isaac, who is another like spy. We know him from the first episode. He was the one who was kind of seducing Leia,
exactly.
Jocelyn's assistant. And now we know why. I mean, I didn't, not that I like super trusted him in the beginning anyway, but now it's just like so much more obvious and nefarious, frankly, that he is just, it's just like another tentacle to use this Ted Ross as like an octopus, another mm-hmm. tentacle that Ted Ross can have around Jocelyn of like, okay, we have Diane who she trusts. She's a plant. Now we have like Isaac who's like right. trying to seduce Leia as like another plant. And the Diane says to Ted Ross, oh, Nikki wants to sign me apparently. And he's like,
yes,
good, let's get, have her call me and we'll negotiate. Like, oh
yeah,
God.
It very, and the other scene we get that is like intercut in, which is so strange and bizarre, and oh, I'm not yeah. like kink shaming, I just was like unsure of what exactly was going on, where we right. have Ted Ross controlling this like zapper and Isaac mm-hmm. is like thrusting and dancing and doing whatever.
No, and we're not really sure. And thankfully it was short. I was grateful that it was short.
Me too. And we had like, he's like, oh, you're not human, you're a star. And he like zaps Isaac. And so, yeah, like very much this is the first episode. Obviously, we're only two episodes in, but this episode right. felt.
But we're a third of the way in already.
Oh my six gosh, episodes. I forgot there's only six episodes.
Yeah.
So already getting culty vibes in terms of like, not obviously Ted Ross is the one who's in charge of everything. And mm-hmm. funnily enough, when he's on the phone later with Jocelyn, Isaac is simultaneously on the yeah. phone with Leia, like yeah. setting all of this up. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's, and everything goes through Ted Ross. He is the one they have to get permission from to yeah. literally do anything, to the point where later when, I'm so sorry, don't know her name, but really good girl who nakedly plays piano, that girl,
Chloe,
she needs permission from Ted Ross to like get in Jocelyn's pool. You know what I mean? Like yes. he like nods
the way
at
he
her.
Just like silently nods at her when she has to, can I get in the pool? And it almost like, it seems like she's asking Jocelyn for permission, but really she's asking mm-hmm. Ted Ross for permission.
That's not his pool. That's not his yeah. pool.
Oh my God. Right.
It was
and,
really
but Jocelyn
upsetting.
Is just so happy to have him there that she doesn't, if she notices, she doesn't care. And you know, that, you know, the scene that I meant to mention and then thankfully you did mention with, you know, the Isaac thing with the pain, like obviously there's a level of control, which is clear that Ted Ross has over all of these people that he is now mm-hmm. trying to get over Jocelyn. And we see that he's already very successful. Again, it's not a very long scene, but like, he's trying to empower. There's this weird like push and pull that like that Ted Ross is kind of like using over Isaac, where he's trying to empower Isaac, like, you know, use your thankfully, I don't know what Isaac is doing and I don't need to know. But the idea of like, you know, get lower. And like, obviously, yes. That's really hard on your body.
And he's
basically
pain.
Asking him to like squat, but simultaneously being electrocuted and having most importantly, all these people staring at him. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a very public display of Ted Ross's control over Isaac.
Yes.
And also Isaac's like, you know, deference to Ted Ross. I don't want to know what's going to happen. You know, I want to like cut Ted Ross out of the show, but that's, this is like the antagonist, right? That like now we know, like at least Jocelyn's team is aware of the situation, but it feels even more so now than it did the first episode. Like they're two or three steps behind. Like
they're infiltrated, right?
Yeah.
They've been infiltrated by Ted Ross and his cult because basically Jocelyn finally gets in touch with Ted Ross and she invites him over and he brings the whole crew. He brings the whole gang over.
Before he showed up with it was just himself, no car. Like
there
was the idea of like, I'm so simple, I don't need a car, I'm just going to show up. Now he shows
his
up
entourage.
With three other people, his like mini posse, and I just couldn't help but feel like it's just going to get bigger and bigger, right? I mean, I guess it was because at the end of the episode, he's like, maybe I should just move in. Just, you know.
I can't wait. Yes. So then they come in, right? And like immediately, like I was talking about Chloe naked in the pool, right? Again, like this show is like obsessed with nipples, Ariel. I really can't. Like the amount of nipples we've seen is just like, they will give any excuse to show a nipple. Uh-huh. And so that she jumps in the pool. Isaac, meanwhile, this was so off-putting to me, Ariel. I don't know if you felt this way as well, where he's like, oh, can I use your bathroom? And Jocelyn's like, oh yeah, it's right. And he's like, I'll find it. And I'm like,
I hated
this
it.
This is not I your house, sir.
This. And she's kind of like, oh, that's cute. But again, nefarious much.
Did not like it.
And he's there. He's not looking for the bathroom. He's
looking
for Leia. And
he's looking to get laid by Leia.
The idea that Jocelyn doesn't know that Isaac and Leia knew each other before this, like, because now Isaac can just say, it totally makes sense that Isaac would just say, oh, I met Leia, you know, tonight at your house, and like we had sex, and like there's nothing weird about that.
Yep.
Or even if it does come up that they had met each other, it just makes sense that Jocelyn wouldn't care. Like if it would take Jocelyn and Leia to like really be on the same page and like try
it doesn't seem as nefarious.
Exactly. Jocelyn to understand that it was like intentional and there's just
pre-set
it doesn't
up.
Seem it doesn't seem to me that would at all enter Jocelyn's mind, let alone a conversation between them about it.
And the other problem is that Leia has now also been like infiltrated, right? And manipulated.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for people,
right,
because
she's Jocelyn's assistant and the one that's like always with her, even at the house, she's like the first line of defense. And last episode,
exactly.
She was like, you know,
and they've infiltrated.
Whatever.
Yes. Yeah. They've taken her down to where now she's on board with all of this. And that's a problem because she's then not going to be reporting it to Chaim or Destiny or anybody else.
Right.
And
because now she's guilty because now if she's had sex with Isaac, she's less likely to speak up because in her mind, she may have done something wrong.
Yes. And so they end up like partying, they do cocaine, and they get Leia to do cocaine, where it seems like, I mean, I don't, based on what they showed, it seemed like she was not really either into it or wasn't usually doing that type of thing. And then we have like Chloe playing the naked piano, which again, the show just loves people being naked. And then in my opinion, like this is where I started, because I was like, I don't want to borderline enjoying the episode. You know, like I thought there were things that were enjoyable about the episode and interesting about it. And then it was like felt like kind of, oh, we're back to what episode one was, where we have.
I was dreading it. I'm dreading it the whole time. I'm like, no, don't leave Jocelyn. I want the storyline to stay as is.
Yes, because then her and Tedros are together and they're making out. And we have other cult member girl who was it Chloe that was watching them? Is that who it was? I feel like she was wearing a wig or something.
It seemed like it was Chloe. Like she had put on this dress and I couldn't tell if like she had gotten this very fancy opulent dress out of maybe Jocelyn's closet. Like she's get a little bit of like I'm getting off pretending like I'm like you. And I was worried she was going to run into the room and get jealous. But of course, Ted Ross is in control, so nobody, you know, interrupts his little whatever game. But just like a weird,
uncomfortable
vibe all around. Although maybe it wasn't Chloe, because right there's a fourth person with them. It's Ted Ross, Isaac.
No, wasn't it
Chloe.
Just the four of them?
It was four. But I'm saying who was the fourth person in the car? It was Isaac, Ted Ross,
Chloe,
and there was a fourth person.
Was it Diane? Yeah.
Maybe.
See, now I don't know.
I don't remember now. But...
I'm getting a little bit confused with all the characters, but regardless, the one cult girl is like watching them get ready to have sex. And Jocelyn says, like, do what you did to me the other night with the robe. And so he blindfolds her and is basically like, you know, giving her instructions, like very much being the like guy in charge, right? To the point where he makes her like go over to the bed and he's like instructing her on what to do. And we see the other cult girl like following those instructions as well.
Right. Because she can't help but also follow his instructions, which
exactly.
We're supposed to like intuit that he has complete control over these people. Again, this is the part that worked least for me of just like him saying all these like very just like gross. I mean, whatever, you know, what people do obviously behind closed doors is like their business and consensual adults. And that's all well and good,
but
just
it
the
gives
idea...
me a bit of like the heebie jeebies in terms of like who this man is. And obviously we have, Jocelyn does not have, but we have the other context for what he's been up to. And it's very concerning. And you can feel the infiltration of him in Jocelyn's life.
In her mind, yeah.
Yes. And we see at the same time, we're like cutting over to Isaac and Leia having sex as well. So like, great. Right. Now he has like, if you picture it like a war, right? Like he's moved his army into her base camp and like they have infiltrated. And it's really concerning. And like after they have sex and everything, they're like, you know, whatever, they're talking and, you know, Jocelyn and Tedros are talking. And we have, I believe it's Chloe who is playing the piano and Jocelyn notices how good she is. Like, she's like, wow, she's actually very talented. And this is when Tedros talks about moving in. And I screamed. I was like, absolutely not. No, do not let this man into your home.
You've known how, like, this is the second time you've met this. Oh, no. Well, she met him at the club. Then he came over. All right, fine. Third time you've met this person.
Oh, no.
Not just like third time you slept with this person, the third time you've been in the same room as this person.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, the show is trying to tell us that's who Ted Ross is, right? He has that ability to like infiltrate, and that's how he gets like all these different people to follow him. But like, even though I think The Weeknd is like a little bit better in this episode, last week it was like honestly like laughable, and you know, I take no pleasure in saying that because acting is very hard and I certainly couldn't do it, but I really just wasn't buying it in the first episode. This episode I was buying it a little bit more, but in this scene where he's like talking to Jocelyn and making her do like all these very sexual things, I kind of wasn't buying it again. It felt very like,
I felt the same way,
male gazy at best, but just like very like gross, like I saw this in a porno, so I'm gonna try it. Like, it's just, it's so the part that's like a little bit problematic for me is like for people to think that this is okay kind of thing, right? And again, consensual adults and all that, that's all valid, but just like it's a little bit of a, not dangerous per se, I think that might be too extreme a word, but it's a little bit,
it's glorifying it a bit.
Yeah, it's glorifying it, which I don't love.
Yeah.
You know, that's who he is. And I'm happy to not like his character, but I think it's a very precarious like balance to try to strike of like, this is a character and we know he's bad and he's doing these things that are potentially wrong or problematic, versus like showing people who who engage in problematic behavior that like their behavior is okay or that it's normal.
Right.
Or, sorry, I don't want to use the word normal because we're dealing with like people's preferences, but that it's okay to glorify this kind of stuff.
Right.
It's and a it's, lot.
Yeah. And so he talks about like moving in, and then we get the other girl in the cult like singing. Jocelyn notices how good of a singer she is. And so they all kind of like end up downstairs around this piano, and they're singing the same like line over and over again. And it's my family. We don't like each other much. I'm okay with that, but it breaks my other mother's heart. And like, it's over and over and over again. And Jocelyn is like crying, and we see like a shot of like Leia watching Jocelyn like sing this.
Yes. And we're all, and you know, they're all having done drugs and taking a whole bunch of shots. So like, you know, they're all in the mood, so to speak. And this was another interesting reveal to me. You know, we talked about the Diane part of it. Isaac talks a little bit about how, because Leia, to her credit, I guess, you know, to her very minimal credit, she is simultaneously being seduced by Isaac, but still there's a part of her brain that's like, what, like, how did you meet Ted Ross? Like, tell me about him. Like, she's suspicious of Ted Ross and is like being inquisitive. She should be more suspicious of Isaac, but whatever. She's, you know, his charm is clearly working on her. So she's asking about him, and this is where we get the detail. Like, Isaac was singing at a church, and Ted Ross was in the crowd, and he noticed him, that he was a good singer, and then he like signed him right away. And Leia's like, wait, he signed you? So he's like, you know, I forget what she asked if he is. And he's like, yeah, he's kind of like my manager. And then in this scene that you're talking about with this piano, which is the final scene of the episode, it was such a fascinating reveal to me of like, oh, wait, are all these people just good singers? And this is the kind of person that he specifically seeks out.
Yes.
These people who have voices, which is ironic because he's taking their voices away, right? He's taking away their agency, which I hate that I just made that connection because I feel like it gives it a little bit more depth than the show is actually getting across.
Yeah, like, it does feel like a different type of cult. This is like an LA cult where you grab onto people with talent.
It's not like a regular cult. It's a cool cult.
It's an LA cult. Right. We're all drink green juices in our dope. But it does feel that way. And it feels like, gosh, when he picks his victims, I'm going to call them that because that's exactly what they are. It's like Jocelyn is the perfect victim for him because she is vulnerable, and she is also on the downswing of her career, right? Like, she was described to be like a Britney or a Christina Aguilera or like you know, at the top of her pop game. Mm-hmm. And then she had this fall from grace when everything with her mother happened.
Right.
And it seems like easy pickings to like go in there and manipulate the situation to insert yourself into her life and her career and take very much advantage of her. And at the very least, Ariel, we know he is on Chaim and Destiny's radar, right? Of
finally,
like, this is a bad guy and we need to watch out for him. The problem is if he already has his claws into Jocelyn, you know, like she seems go ahead.
Sorry, I was just gonna say, I'll never forget Destiny's delivery of like, his name is Tedros.
Like, like, who is this guy? Why? And like, let's be very clear, Ariel. Like, the show is making a point to be like, this man has a rat tail. Like, he showed us someone braiding his rat tail today.
I'm so glad you brought it up because I noticed that. And I was like, this is so interesting to me because the show goes out of its way, like you just said, to not only like feature the rat tail, like it doesn't want us to forget that everybody in universe is aware of the rat tail. And I think that's to the show's credit, because that would be even more egregious. But when he's on the phone and there's a person just braiding the rat tail, I'm like, that's somehow worse. Like, this
it's
is like
worse. It's gross.
Work. This takes work, Jess. The rat tail doesn't just happen. The rat tail
needs to be
made.
Braided, Ariel. It's like so weird and gross. I don't know.
I'm shocked.
I'm surprised it didn't come up when Chaim was asking Leia about him. Like, that would have been one of the first things out of my mouth is he has a rat tail.
Yeah, she has. I mean, Leia. Yes, it didn't come up right. Instead of being like, He's a person of color. You should be like, yo, he has a rat tail.
That's the first thing you need to know about him is his rat tail. It's the first thing I would say about him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm worried about all my other favorite characters who do not include Ted Ross. Even Nikki, I think she's like a way more interesting antagonist because she's like on the team and she's like clearly looking out more so for Jocelyn the brand than Jocelyn the person and kind of like at all costs. Enough, so much so that actually it seems like she's willing to drop Jocelyn. Like she's already like moving on to the next thing. And it makes sense that someone like Nikki would do that.
Yeah, Mike. Confusion and my question is, did she drop Nikki, or excuse me, did Nikki drop Jocelyn? Like, is the music video over? Because it seemed to imply that.
Right, yeah, because we did get the thing of like I think it was Haim who was telling her towards the end, like she decided to go, you know, we're deciding to move on without the music video or something like that. That was like a small throwaway line that I forgot about. So maybe we don't, I mean, on the one hand, it kind of would make sense that they're not going to film that scene again in a different way because they've kind of given us all the different angles of it, but or at least emotional angles of it, even though the camera was out of focus. But I don't know. I mean, these days we don't get a music video for every song or every, you know, that was like a very Us When We Were Younger thing of like music videos were a much bigger thing. There was a whole channel
especially
for them,
the pop age of like Christina and Britney, and oh my gosh.
Right.
Ermer Gersh. The Britney in the like red latex outfit. Like, do you remember like those were like the dirty video of Christina Aguilera like kicking around the water and
the big like snake anaconda thing, whatever, on Britney's like shoulders. It was a whole vibe. Yes. Wow, now I miss all that stuff.
I know, me too.
I think that's the episode. So like I said, we're now a third of the way through the season because it's only six episodes, which is wild. So by next episode, we'll be halfway done with the season. It's crazy. But, you know, I will say, like you said, I enjoyed this episode a little more. There's still like with the Ted Ross stuff, especially there's like these problematic vibes that extend beyond just we're supposed to think this character is bad. It's just, you know, I wish the show were like a little bit cleaner or honestly just a little bit more clever. Like if I were interested in Ted Ross more as a character, almost against my better judgment, it would be like more, I would enjoy those scenes more because like I said, the whole time the Jocelyn video shoot was going on, I was like, please no Ted Ross this episode. Please no Ted Ross this episode.
I know, because I was enjoying the Jocelyn stuff. And so it does. Yeah. I don't know. That's the problem is that like the Ted Ross stuff is going to be a big part of the show. And so I wish we would just be exploring Jocelyn's grief and how she's handling it and dealing with her career and all of that simultaneously. I enjoy that storyline so much more than I enjoy the Ted Ross stuff. Mostly, not primarily, but like in part due to the fact that it feels like they're being just like salacious to be salacious. Like that's what it feels like to me a lot of the time. So, but this episode was an improvement over episode one. So we have that.
Yeah, it was. Wow. A third of the way. Incredible. Incredible. I'm worried for Jocelyn, for her well-being, obviously. Yeah. So I'm worried for Leia now too, because she is now, you know, completely entranced by Isaac. And how dare you, Diane? I was rooting for you. I loved you in the first episode. And now you were a plant the whole time.
Yeah,
I mean,
we were all rooting for you, Diane.
Like you said, but like, I do not forgive the betrayal. The Diane betrayal hit me the hardest.
Fair. It's very fair.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's episode two. Jess, thank you so much for coming on and cover. Oh, I think I can see Grace get. Oh, she's finally up. Okay.
She stood up. Great.
She's okay, people. She's okay. We're going to do another take. We're going to do another take next episode. But until then, Jess, what else have you got going on and where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me at the Jess Sterling on Twitter. We're wrapping up our Succession coverage, which unfortunately breaks my little heart, but it's fine. It's fine. I'll get over it. Grace and I are actually also talking about a Peacock show based on a true story, which is like a thriller / comedy / like
slasher. Is it actually based on a true story?
No. If it was... If it was, I would straight up die. It's a bit wild.
That is a true story.
All 8 episodes have dropped on Peacock. So check it out if that's something you're interested in. It's a pretty quick binge, to be honest. The first episode is like 40-something minutes, but every episode thereafter is under 30. So it's very, very quick. Beyond that, community building is back. You can hear me and Josh talking about the final season of Community. And then I'm also on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheJessSterling. I'm playing Last of Us 2, which is very exciting. And then I may be doing some other gaming on there as well. So that's where you can find me.
Coolio, love all that. I am also on Twitter at that other Ariel. I am covering movies with Grace on Puerto Recaps Theater. We covered, what did we cover last week? Across the Spider-Verse. We're covering the new Transformers movie, Rise of the Beasts, I believe it's called. And also covering the Netflix show Dark that we all love with Grace and our friend DM Philly. And I, speaking of things ending, I'm so sad that that is ending because we're halfway through the third season at this point and the car is only moving faster and I want to get off, but also I don't want to get off. So, and there's one more thing. Oh, and also I'm covering Grey's Anatomy with Chappelle. We finally released our, you know, final episodes of the season podcast. So look out for that in your feeds. And I think that's everything. I always manage to forget, but you know, you can follow me on Twitter, like I said, and also follow the pod if for your URL podcast, catch your knees, PuertoRecaps.com again, / no, PuertoRecaps.com. There's no again. It's PuertoRecaps.com/euphoria. No again. But we will see you again or hear you. You'll hear us for next episode. Until then, bye-bye for now. Be careful out there. Avoid Ted Roth at all.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.